Welcome to the Children's Book Author Podcast. I'm your host, Eleanor Page. If you write for children, or it's always been your dream to, you're in the right place. As the Children's Book Author, I'm on a quest to discover everything there is about writing, publishing, and marketing children's books, as well as how to supercharge my creativity, skyrocket my productivity, and absolutely everything else there is to know about how to be the best, so you can be too. Join me as I interview fabulous guests and become the children's book author. Welcome back to episode 4 of the Children's Book Author Podcast with me, Eleanor Page. Today's interview is with Kelly Irving, who is a professional book writing coach. Now, Kelly mostly works with people who are writing their nonfiction book, which is brilliant. Her advice is absolutely fantastic. But as a fiction book author, I took away so much about having a really strong strategy and making sure that my story is actually a good story from the very beginning, because Kelly, I think, is and was a developmental editor. And this is often the case, right? We sit down, we write a book, we send it off to the editor to fix up the grammar, and then we put it out into the world. But story structure is super important, and that's Kelly's strength, the thing she's amazing at. So I know that you're going to gain a lot from listening to her interview. She also really talks to the entrepreneur in me, so I know you're going to gain a lot yourself if you are an entrepreneur yourself. If you are marketing your book in any way, shape, or form, then guess what? You are an entrepreneur, so you will gain a lot from listening to this interview with Kelly Irving. I will get out of the way and let you listen to it. Enjoy the interview, and I'll see you on the next one. Welcome to the show, Kelly.
Thanks, Elena. Thanks, everyone. It's really good to be here.
So tell us a little bit about what you do, or a lot about what you do. Tell me all about it.
Okay, so what I do, I help people make work that matters and makes an impact. How I do that, or how I describe how I do that, I would call myself a bit of a dot connector. So I'm actually really good at solving complex problems for people, often with their messaging that's been really bugging them for years in their business. There's a kind of an analogy that I like to use, which really kind of unpacks how I do it. And it's kind of like being a gold miner or a prospector or something. So I'm really super good at digging around inside people's heads, kind of looking through the rubble, searching for the little specks of gold that you need to polish and bring that out into the world in a valuable kind of way. So your wisdom. How I work is, I mean, if you were to put like a label on that, most people would put me in the bucket, because, you know, we like to put people in buckets, of being a developmental editor. So that means my sweet spot is the beginning stage. So whenever someone thinks, oh, I've got an idea, or I'd love to write a book, but I've got no idea what or how I would do that, this is the area that I'm really super good at. So this is where you come to me in terms of, okay, I've got this idea, now what?
And do you find most people write the thing and then come to you, and that's almost like too late?
Yeah, so it's a good description in terms of how I got to where I am. So as an editor, predominantly what would happen is people go away, they spend months, weeks, years quite often, you know, battling, trying to get a manuscript out. And you're talking like, you know, 45,000, if not upwards, number of words. Then they come to an editor like me. And what was happening was I would actually end up taking them right back to the beginning, because they haven't actually asked and answered some really key questions: why they're doing it, who they're doing it for, where the market fit is, et cetera, which is actually would have made the manuscript a hell of a lot better. So, yes, you can go to what you would call like a copy editor, but that's not me. Although I do that and I'm trained in that area, you're not ready for a copy edit until you've got your ideas down, your thoughts down, like, and have that solid foundation, And then an editor can help you like finesse the words. So a good way of thinking about it is, I think, especially when you think about books and writing, there's a big focus on the craft of writing, like how we write elegantly, how we pull sentences together, et cetera, et cetera. But before you start writing, it's all about thoughts. It's about ideas. It's about intellectual property. It's about like a bunch of other stuff first and foremost. So for me, that sweet spot is this foundational stage, because then all the steps and the craft of writing can come much later.
Oh my gosh, so super important. And absolutely, you know, when I first wrote my very first novel, fiction novel, I just wrote the thing and then I sent it over to my copy editor. She's like, do you think you need a bit of developmental editing? And I said, no, I think it's good. And she's like, yeah, just maybe a little bit. Ended up being a lot, of course. And I learned it, like you say, the hard way, like so many people do. Is that also for like non-fiction? Do you help fiction and non-fiction or just?
Yeah, I primarily work in non-fiction. And like I would describe it as, you know, people who are writing business books, people who are writing like self-development books, memoirs, although that's a relatively new space for me. I would actually describe it as like people think about self-development or self-help. I actually call it stealth help, because they're usually books that are actually providing some sort of guidance for the other person, but it doesn't have to be a step one, step two, like that follow my process type of thing. So, that's the coin of the term that I would use for my category. But that description that you said in terms of, you know, I wrote my book and then I handed it to someone and then they basically said, you know, I've got all this rework to do. That's exactly what I'm talking about. So we're talking about building from the foundation up instead of spending years or like wasted energy and effort, you know, thinking you've got something really good and then someone telling you, oh, no, I think you need to do a bit more work on it.
And what you said about being able to, as you were talking in your introduction, every thought in my head was, I need to hire Kelly. Because, you know, like it's so true that, I mean, I've been in business a lot of years before I moved into the sort of more official creative space, and I was in the health and personal development field. But every so often I would change my tagline, right? And everyone would be like, okay, she's changed it again. And then I'd be like, no, that's not the essence of what I do. This is the essence of what I do. And then I, you know, so getting that messaging right from the very beginning, and, you know, of course my audience here, I'm assuming, is mostly creatives, though it could be a lot of other people, entrepreneurs, whatever. But essentially, even creatives are putting something out into the world, and how they represent themselves or what their main, as you say, their gold is. How come we get that wrong, and how can we start to get that right? Is it because we're asking the wrong questions?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things in here before I answer that question. So something that you touched on is like the essence of what I do. Like I actually really love that description, because when you work on a book, regardless of maybe fiction aside, I'll come back to fiction because there's a lot of crossover here. But when you're working on a book, what you're actually working on, sure, you're going to get the output and it's going to be a book at the end of it. You're actually working on your whole business message, or what the essence of who you are, what you do for people, how you serve people, who your audience is. So it's actually far bigger than just working on a book. It's just like it's a really intangible thing that you don't realize until you're going through the process. Because a lot of people will talk about it being, you know, it's a bit of a cliche, but being like the biggest personal transformational journey you can go on. And yeah, it sounds like a cliche, but it's so goddamn true. Like everybody I know that has gone through that process will say that. And most people who write a book always come back for a second, always come back for a third, always come back for a fourth. So the intangibility at first and the risk that seems kind of associated with it always comes back as a return on investment in some sort of way or another. The second point that I wanted to make, because you talk about, you know, creatives and non-creatives, it's like the way that I describe it, so even though I'm working to, you know, in non-fiction, a lot of my clients are like entrepreneurs, business owners, speakers, coaches, something like that. every creative project has to have a process and a system behind it. So I often quite often use the analogy, like thinking about improv acting. It's like improv acting, you think people come to a stage and it's spontaneous and they move in time and everything kind of happens there and then in the spot. It's like there is a method to the madness that you don't see. So it is the process and the system and the method behind it that actually gives you the ability to appear spontaneous. So I think this is a, and this is, you know, I think this is the thing when we think about creative work or non-creative work, or if we're a creative and if we're a non-creative, it's actually a balance of the two. So there's like a continuum. It's like, yes, it might be like writing or crocheting or drawing or whatever it is. Like it's a creative, it seems like it's a creative process and you've got to have ideas and you want it to be unique and you want it to be you and et cetera, et cetera. But unless you've got a process and a system behind it, it will always be an idea. It will never get finished. It will always be, I'm working on this book. I've got two books in the making. No, I've got three books in the making. So if anybody tells you that they're writing multiple books, you can kind of gather, like it's sort of like, okay, well, why don't you just finish one first? And this is often a like part of the realization. It's like if you don't have that system behind it, then you won't actually do it. Equally, you know, it goes the other way. So I've just finished working on a memoir with someone. His name is Mark Wales. So he's ex-SAF. So his book is about to be published with Pam McMillan. And so it's about his life in and out of the SAS. You know, he was like a commander, you know, great operative, great guy, like super honest, super raw, super personal. And the process is really interesting because, well, one, if I would, in terms of process and system, like I'd say on a coaching call, okay, you need to do this, 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 and this, like five things, right? Now, it would take most people like a week and they'd probably achieve like two or three of those things. This guy would have it done in like 24 hours and be asking for the next thing, right? And he'd have like a spreadsheet to go with like his word count and this and that. Like it was so detailed. It was like the process and the system and the planning was something he was so good at just because of his training and stuff like that. But through the process is like what I realized was where like a lot of our coaching was really getting to the heart of, and I was like, yeah, but why did you do that? Like, I get like you wanted to join the SAS when you were 12, but that's like not normal. Like, what was the driver? What were you thinking? What were you this? And so if you put him on the continuum, it's like he needed that expert. He needed the creativity. He needed to expand on ideas. He needed to like bring some of that emotion and stuff. And if you look at his background, like what I realized was, you know, he's basically been trained not to be interrogated and I'm interrogating him. So it's just an example. It's like it's just understanding where you sit on that continuum. And I think if you're not a creative, people tend to think, oh, I can't write. I'm not creative. I can't write. And I can blow that out of the water and say you don't need to be a good writer to write a book, but you need a good process and you need a good system, and then you need to know the people that you need around you to help you with the finessing with the language and the words and et cetera, et cetera. Equally, if you're on the other side and you're creative, then you need that system and you need that process and you need a butt kicker and you need someone to keep you accountable and you need someone to help you decide which idea, because you're going to have this idea and then you're going to go off on a tangent and you're going to think, oh no, actually I need to have this idea or bring this in, et cetera, et cetera. So it's actually, I'm really big on just helping people understand who they are as a person, where their personality naturally fits, and then what are the tools or the strategies and things that maybe they need to think about in order to create that work.
Wow, like so good. You like covered the two sides of the spectrum. And as you were talking, I was going that side, I was going that side. I was like, I think I started in the middle. But, you know, ultimately, even someone who's pretty good at both can always improve at them, yeah, because we'll have innate weaknesses or strengths. Do you find that? You can still get it better and better?
Yeah, and I actually would say, so there's a couple of things. So there's actually a quiz I get people to do to figure out. So I would say traditionally types of people I work with, they will fall in four brackets. I call it like a deep thinker. So that's someone who's really good at like analyzing, and they'll think about things a lot. You know, they want to know and they'll have a big plan for what they're going to do, blah, blah, blah. But actually getting them to commit and sit down and start typing a word is really hard, because it can always be better, or it could be always a different idea. And then the opposite almost of that is someone who's a really gifted storyteller. So people who are really good at sitting down and they've got a story for everything, or an example for this and a case story and this and that, and they can just write. So I've got a client, I've been working with her, she's on like her sixth book now, and I mean her specialty is storytelling, so it kind of makes sense. But she could give me a story for this and that and blah, blah, blah for like forever. But it's too much, because there's no content in there. What's the logical sequence? What's the message, the one idea that hinges all those stories together? So you've got to really, like, people like that have to really almost learn to edit their own work really well, because they've got to think about the connections between things. It's not about sharing every story possible. There's got to be some sort of logical, cohesive argument that hinges it together. And then the other side of that are people who I call like masterminds. So they've got awesome at citing like facts and stats and case studies. And this is great, because especially if you think about the context of like a nonfiction book or a business book that has to have credible arguments, you know, stuff like that. It's really strong in those ideas and those arguments and stuff. But the issue that I find with that is the downside is people can be really bloody boring to read. It's like dry, like there's no life in the material. And so the last one is the entrepreneur. Super, super passionate about what they do, sharing a story with other person, helping other people, et cetera, et cetera. But you could write this, or it could be this, or there's always a better idea here, or what about this? And I'll just like throw in everything and hope that it all sticks together and makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's definitely me. Thank you for acknowledging it. I love the, you know, the word but negates everything before it. So, you know, like you started off saying nice things about the entrepreneur, about all of them, and then you said, but.
It's like that, where's your strengths and where your weaknesses are? Because it's often like there's no one's bad. Like there's no, it's also like there's no bad or wrong way to write a book, but there is a freaking really ineffective way of writing a book. So it's about utilizing your strengths and your weaknesses, understanding like a process and a system that's going to like make you effective, so you don't have to waste time and effort and energy. So these, you know, personalities, they've got strengths, but they've also got a downside. And once you understand what your weakness might be, you can almost like course rectify. So like a deep thinker needs to just be more like a storyteller, like just sit down and start writing. And I can relate to this because I'm actually a deep thinker. So I learn over time, stop thinking about it, just sit down and actually start writing, and you'll actually get into it a lot easier and a lot more flow. So, you know, the entrepreneur, it's kind of like, okay, just slow down a minute and think, what is the logic behind this? What is the argument? Why am I telling this? Do I actually need this, or am I just going off and chasing blue rabbits?
Yeah, I can totally relate to that. Totally. And in fact, I find it really hard. Like, you know, people are like, so why are you doing a podcast? So why do you write children's books? And I'm like, I should know the answer to this because I'm so passionate about it. But because...
That's a good question too, because actually my whole process starts with the question why.
I knew it would. I knew it would. Everybody does, and it hurts, and I never can answer it.
Which is what makes it so hard. It's like the simplest question in the world, and yet it's the question that trips everybody up. And so, you know, and I think in my space in particular, it's like, if you talk to anyone, so you're talking about, you know, people who are using their book as an area of expertise in their business, and they want to share what they know and their knowledge with other people, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a whole big thing and a buzz thing at the moment to write a book to position yourself as an authority in your field, right? So people are just doing it so that they are seen as the credible source. The issue for me with that is, and I'm very quick to bust this as a myth for people, that is the result of writing a really good book. It is not why you should set out writing it. Because if you have set out with that goal in mind, that is why you're going to start, and you'll never actually end up finishing it. So I can actually tell you what to write, and I can tell you how to write it. Like, you could probably spend half an hour with me right now, and I could actually just whip it out for you. The one thing I can
do that after the podcast.
The one thing I can't ever give you, and no one else can give you this either, too, is why you should do it. It has to be an internal motivation. So all those people that tell you, that's a great story, you should write a book on that, you can't just set out on a journey just because somebody's told you you should write a book on that, because you are the one that has to sit at the laptop, type out the words and undergo all of the steps to get you from start to finish. It just has to be an internal motivation. So that question, why you're doing something, just trips people up every time. You know, there's no wrong reason to write a book. Like, if you really think that you have a great story to share and, you know, you want to use it because you want to go, you love writing and you want to commit that into something, and it's kind of like a legacy piece or something, you want to share that with your children or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Awesome. You go do that. But the downfall is when we set out to do that and then we expect a publisher is going to pick us up because it's a great story. So it's actually aligning your expectations to reality. There's no wrong reason to write a book because you have a great story and you want to go through that cathartic process and it's going to be hugely valuable to you. But you have to realize if you set out with that intention, then your mum, your dad, your sister or your close friends are going to be your readers, but no one else.
Yeah, so true. And you also help authors to put in proposals to publishers. Is that right?
Yeah. So this is, this is almost how I grew to where I am, because the first book that I worked on, she's actually my longest standing client now. So she's just got her sixth book coming out, Gabrielle Dolan. She had the opportunity to pitch it. So I helped her put a pitch together for a publisher and it got picked up. And then it just kind of steamrolled from there. So I've actually, you know, made some really great connections direct with commissioning editors and publishers because I know what they're looking for. So I see myself as a conduit between an author and their audience, usually in the form of a publisher, if it's the right fit. Because you have to realize, you know, why you're writing could be really different to why a publisher thinks you're writing. So it has to really align. But I think that although I work with people who self-publish as well, because, and that process that I've talked about is devised through the process that I take my clients through when they're pitching. Because even if you're self-publishing, no matter if you're going to do your, you know, your book for your parents or your children or whoever, you need to run it through a commercial lens. So you need to actually assess the viability of your idea and make sure all of those buckets line up. So even if you're self-publishing, I sort of run people through a process that publishers would be looking for. And that's how you kind of set yourself up for success and make sure as well that those expectations that you have at the start are really aligned to what's going to happen at the end of it. Because I can tell you, like, it's happened so many times. When people, even if you set out on the journey and you decide your why is, yeah, no, I don't want a publisher, it's just a cool story and I want to have it in print so I can share it with family and friends that might be interested, etc. When you go through the process and the hard yards and you've got something tangible in your hands at the end of it, everybody's mindset suddenly goes to, I've got to get this into as many people's hands as possible. It's like you totally forget what the objective for writing was in the first place and who it was for, and then suddenly it becomes this thing. And that's where people get really disappointed, because they go, why? But I don't understand why I've been rejected by a publisher. Like, why? It's a great story. Like, I put in this work. I don't understand. And so it just sort of totally warps your mindset.
Yeah, and I love what you said. You run it through that commercial lens. That's so important. And there's often debates, you know, in Facebook groups where, you know, someone will put up their cover or something and everybody will be like, look, it's really nice, but it's unprofessional. And they'll go, and it's, this whole fight starts out, you know. And I think, but it sort of is unprofessional. I mean, it's still great. It's still creative. It's still beautiful. But it is unprofessional because there is a particular standard, isn't there?
Yeah, I think the thing is, it's like, and that's the issue with groups, especially on covers. And I mean, this is a good thing. Like, everybody loves to post that, you know, do you choose cover A or do you choose cover B? If you ever follow any of that on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, you will see thousands and thousands of comments and likes and et cetera, et cetera. So it's good in terms of generating like an interest, et cetera. But what you've got to realize is half of those people have no understanding of who you are, what your book idea is, and they're probably not in the market of the audience that you're targeting. So you have to be really, really careful. Like, someone's version of what is unprofessional, like, what does that mean? Like, if it's not, because if you were to put it in the market, let's just say it's a romance book or something, you put that in the romance book, they have a certain style, they have a certain look, blah, blah, blah. So what you deem as unprofessional could actually be perfectly suitable to that market.
True, true, true. Yeah, I'm hearing you. Like, generally I'd probably say it'd be like a font, almost like you can tell if they've done the font themselves.
Like Comic Sans.
You think, I don't know why that doesn't look right, but it looks like you did it on the, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's definite, and I mean, this is where it comes to self-publishing, right? You know books that have been self-published because you can judge it on the font. Okay. But I think self-publishing has come like such a long way than a few years ago. It's like, so any book that I've ever worked on, like, I used to manage like the whole process of a self-published book and design and stuff like that. And all of my books, the aim was to always make them a standard so they look like they come from a publisher. And they do. It's just that I think people just cut corners, people, you know, and it is, it's almost like it's become so easy to self-publish that there's so many shortcuts and fast hacks. And you've got to understand that trade-off between a quality publication and one that's not, which is why I'm also a big believer there's not necessarily one right way for everybody to write a book. It has to be about you making conscious decisions and choices based on you, what you're trying to achieve, why you're doing it, and where your budget is as well. And so the way that you will do something will be really different from the way I do something because we're at totally different stages or we're trying to achieve different things. And so my role is kind of helping people make those choices. Because I think the thing out there is, you know, there's no, and this is the, you know, the downfall of publishers now, like they're so resource poor. They don't have time to nurture authors. It's not their role anymore. And so that's where the space that I play in is to really nurture people from that. You know, if you want to do something, if you want to write, you can do it. You just need that support and that guidance to help you through that, you know, to actually do that.
So what sort of things do publishers look for? Like you said, they've got certain criteria. Is there a few things that you can mention?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the biggest thing for people, which sort of blows people's minds in a lot of ways, like, you can have the best book idea in the world. If you don't have a platform to sell it, they're not interested. So it is half content, it's two things, content and sales, because you've got to understand that publishers are in the business of books, aka selling books out. And as harsh as it sounds, like, I think that's the reality, is that so much of it relies on an author to almost generate a lot of the sales and the marketing and stuff like that. Like, it has to be twofold. And that's, again, why that commercial understanding of an idea. And I think this was where I wanted to go back to, because you mentioned, you know, fiction before. It's like every fiction book that comes out of a publisher has had a commercial lens put over it. It's actually understanding you can't just have like an idea for this crazy cool book because there's never been like this story written out there, and then expect that's going to attract attention. Like, you still have to run it through, okay, where is the market? What, where do I fit? What, you know, why is it a viable and valuable idea? Why is there a market for people buying it? Why would people want to consume it, you know, and all of those types of things. So I think that a lot of people forget that, or they don't understand that. And I think that's a really important, you know, distinction. And again, it sort of goes back to why. So there's no, if you've got that cool story, you can still write it, but it might not be attractive in terms of a publisher market.
Yeah, and even, you know, this morning when I went for my walk, and I can't remember what it was now, I've completely forgotten, but at the time I got this new book idea and I thought, oh, my God, that is so good. And then the sensible voice said, sweetie, you got like 5 books to write in the series you've already started. You know those 5 books? So stay on the plan.
That's the entrepreneur again. You're jumping ahead.
Totally. So, you know, it's like there's a strategy there, you know, like where I do see a lot of authors who are, no, I'm creative. So they sort of throw all sorts of books out, you know, like just different genres, different, and maybe that's okay. I'm not saying that isn't, but for me, like I had a very sort of strategic plan of this series, this series, this series, and it's tough to write in a series. Like I find that there are problems with it, and I think, oh, it'd be nice to just write something new that's not in a series. But series sell, yeah, on Amazon in particular, series sell. So I'm still, even though I've got a lot of that creativity and looking at that commercial aspect of it, and I love that you say it's important to do that if part of your why is that you want it to be a business of some description.
Word that you just used, which was strategy. That's what we're talking about at those beginning steps. Like, what is the strategy for the book idea? How are you actually going to get it into your reader's hands? And that's really super critical. And it's the one thing that everybody just overlooks or gets wrong. And I think it's important to sort of say here, I think for creatives, it's a little bit of a part of you. So my whole process revolves around, and part of that understanding why you're doing something, that's a strategy. You need to understand how you're going to get your book into your reader's hands. And you have to think about that up front. And that's why it all starts with why you're doing what you're doing. But I also think, like, you know, this conversation, if you're a creative, if you're like a natural creative, you've got heaps of ideas and you love it, there's a little part of you right now that's probably dying.
Yes. Thank you for acknowledging that, Kelly.
Sounds so like analytical, and there's a process and a system, and I need to have a strategy for something. Like, I just want to write what I want to write. Like, it just sounds like, it just sounds like, oh God, I can't get anywhere until I've like done this, you know, logical sort of stuff. So I kind of get that. And again, it's okay. Like, but it is the reality of the things that you have to think about if you do want to make it in terms of a publisher or bigger reach or things like that. That's just the reality of it. But yeah, there's no reason why you can't also, and this is something that I'm big on in my process, like a book shouldn't be boring to write. It's going to be freaking hard, I won't lie, and there's going to be challenges along the way, but you should be able to make it fun. You should still be able, like those challenges, like climbing a mountain or giving yourself a really big challenge. It's exactly the same, but you don't want to go through the process and be like, if you're dragging yourself to your laptop and it always feels like an effort. Sure, you're going to have some days like that, but if it always feels like an effort, and like, why the frick should you finish this thing anyway? Like, people are actually going to sense that in the work that you end up giving to them. People know, readers know, you know when someone's poured their heart and soul into a piece of work and when they've just like hashed it out in like 5 minutes in the lounge room or something. Like we're discerning as consumers, we're really discerning in that way. And so it is that balance of, yeah, having some logic and stuff to it, but also it is the logic and the system and the structure and the strategy and stuff that actually facilitates the creativity and the spontaneity. And once you've got that foundation, you can add pieces of yourself. You find the right voice and you can add little flourishes here and there, and you can get creative with the structure and stuff like that. You just need to have the foundation first.
Yeah, makes sense. So tell me a bit about your the journal you made. So it's a writing journal. It's called Author Your Journey, yeah. One Step at a Time, which is perfect for us entrepreneurs and all the rest of our types. One step at a time.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good example. Like, why did I do this? And I'll probably podcast, you won't be able to see it. But, you know, it's heavily illustrated. And this was a really big thing for me. So, you know, in terms of if I was to walk you through like the sequence, the process and the system that I used to write this book is entirely what I teach other people. And when you look at it, like, and if I show you the content, it doesn't look like there's a sequence to it. It doesn't look like there's any kind of logical structure to it, but there is, around a really specific structure. But then you can add creativity and flair to it. So this is my creative take on the writing journey, or, you know, authoring journey, whatever it is that you want to write. And one of the biggest reasons for this was, like, I kind of wanted it to be abstract, because I think, you know, there's so many things if you were to Google, like, how to write a book. Like, there's so many how to write a book books. There's so many how to do this books. And it's all practical and it's all pretty boring and bland. So I wanted to bring just that element of creativity into the process to make it fun for me. So I worked with my designer Ellie and an illustrator, Guy Downs, who is awesome, who I've worked with on books before. And so the result is, like, it looks like I've just sat down at the desk and hashed it out in like half an hour, but it's actually gone through a really, you know, rigorous process to kind of get it to that point. And the point of it is to help people take them from and understand some of the things that you need to think about on the journey, like understanding who your audience is and how you write to them, and also like some of the challenges like mindset. You know, because I'm not a creative, or I can't write, or why should I do this? So you can actually use it to fill it out. Some of the exercises in there have been devised from my clients. So from working with clients on their books, like Donna McGeorge, she's a productivity pro. So I devised with her a little exercise that is about being your most productive, which is basically using your first 2 hours of the day to do your best work. And, yeah, and it's a little fun project, because before I was doing this and before I was a book coach, I was actually a travel writer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was a travel journalist. So travel was a really big thing, you know, key interest of mine. And writing is a journey. So there's lots of parallels between this, between, like, taking people on an adventure, you know, climbing the mountain, walking in the wild, things like that. But it's actually been inspired from just because I love travel.
But interesting, like you said, like, every book takes people on an adventure.
Yeah, totally. Job to tell them what adventure they're going on.
And it's your job to tell them what adventure they're going on. Oh, my goodness, they have to be sticky notes on my wall from now on. When I veer off track, I'm like, am I taking them on an adventure? No. I've stopped taking them on an adventure. It's funny. I have moments where I think, nope, the adventure's died here, and I just have to step away, and then I come back, like you say, a bit enthused, and then the adventure goes again.
Yeah, so. Sure. And that's like part of it, right? It's like not every day is going to be a diamond. And it's actually understanding how you work. It's being able to give yourself perspective. Like, sometimes you whatever you're doing and step away from it for like a week or 2 weeks, and then come back with a renewed perspective on it. It's kind of that balance again. Like, and I talk about balance a lot, because it is like walking a tightrope. There's so many contradictions in this creative process, I think, and it's making the right choices in order to balance that. You know, when is the time where you need to step away, and when are you actually just looking for an excuse? But understanding the difference, because you need to show up. You need to progress, and progress doesn't look like perfection. And some days it's going to feel terrible. And some days it's going to feel great and you're going to get into flow really quickly. I mean, I know this from, you know, and a lot of what I teach is from my personal experience too, as a writer, because I used to be the worst for, like, I would wait until like the last minute on a deadline and then like stay up for like 12 hours trying to like churn this thing out. And it was horrible. And I didn't enjoy it until I kind of learned that, you know, you need to do a little step, like a bit of progress, chip away, chip away, chip away. And then you can have some immersive time, you know, when you've got it to a certain stage, like have 2 or 3 days playing with it and you'll get into flow, et cetera, et cetera. So you got to work out when you're making excuses and when, you know, when you actually need some perspective.
Is it better for somebody to fill that journal out like before they even start writing? Is that what you would suggest?
Yeah, I mean, this is the reason why I designed it was before you go on any writing journey.
Just get your thoughts out and your ideas.
Get into flow. Like, I think that's the thing. Like, and the reason why it's, you know, hard copy is because you need to get away from your laptop. It's like this is, again, about the creativity thing, right? The first part in the process is actually, you know, sometimes don't sit at a laptop. You know, like you need to, in order to, you know, get your creativity going, it's so much better to work on a piece of paper and a pen sitting under a tree or somewhere to facilitate, you know, your creative juices or whatever. And then you kind of transfer and do the work at the laptop. I think that's a really important distinction. It's certainly been a really important distinction in the way that I work. You know, it's like big picture planning, framing, structuring, all of that type of stuff can be done away from the laptop. Like facilitate those, and there's an exercise in here that is about facilitating the aha moments in your brain, because there's a lot of studies, you know, neuroscience around that. You've got to let the little people who are sitting in the back bits of your brain do their work. But that usually comes after you've had a lot of thought and a lot of thinking, and then you step away and you give it space, and then the dots kind of connect together. Yeah, so there's kind of that kind of thing taken into account. Discipline is a really big thing as well. And I mean, I would actually say my husband's always talking about how disciplined I am, because it kind of takes grit to be some sort of creative. It takes grit to do a book. It takes grit to paint a painting. And so I always give myself the 30-minute test. So even when on those days where I really don't feel like doing something, I will actually come in and give myself 30 minutes to, you know, see what the difference is. And I can guarantee you, like, 9 times out of 10, within the 30 minutes, I'm in the zone. But if I am at 1% where I'm not, I'll go for a walk or do something different, because it's just not going to happen.
The 30-minute test, I love this. I think I do the 30-minute test without realizing I do the 30-minute test. I always do set a 30-minute timer and say, just write for 30 minutes. Doesn't matter, just write for 30 minutes, that's all. And then, like, as you say, even if I'm not feeling it, I generally get into the – but my problem is starting, because I'm one of these, oh, shiny toy. Oh, message came through. So I love that, you know, you're encouraging step away from the devices, get the paper out.
Yeah, so that's why the journal is great, because it's like, okay, I'm not ready. I could be doing this. All right, go and sit under a tree and do some journaling in here and then get yourself into the mood. Because sometimes you've got to trick yourself. It's like, oh, I don't feel like doing the work. I could be doing something else. I could be washing. I could be doing this. And you're looking for excuses. So you've got to trick yourself around that.
And do you work one-on-one with people as well?
A couple of ways I work with people. So my full suite, like premium one-on-one services, are now reserved for people who are going through publishers. But what I did was, because the issue is, it's such an intensive process. It's such an enjoyable process getting to work with people on their creative endeavors, but it's also very time intensive. And so my ability to help people is limited. So That's why I created what I call the Expert Author Academy. So I basically took the process that I use with all of my clients when I'm doing one-on-one with them and put it in the form of, I'm going to say online program, but it's actually now way more than just being an online program. So I'll lay the materials and the process is like a step-by-step kind of process that you work through online. The result has been it's become a coaching community and experience. So I actually run like fortnightly group coaching with people where we either do mini masterclasses. I bring on like guest experts from industry. So I know all about marketing and publishing and, you know, all of that type of stuff, but it's not my sweet spot. So I bring on the experts and the people that I work with, publishers that I often work with, things like that, to come on and do, you know, to run those sessions for me. And the result has been awesome because what it's actually created is like a judgment-free, safe space for people. And I think that's really important when you're dealing with like your life's work or something that you feel deeply kind of proud and associated with. So I do things like buddy people up. So they have what's called like, and it's optional, they're called focus friends. So I put people into like pods, teams of three, and then they have the opportunity to kind of become accountability buddies. So quite often people are catching up like every week. It's not about being in a writer's group, and I'm really strict on that. It's not about can you read my stuff and tell me if it's any good, but it is about where are you at, what are you struggling with, because I can guarantee you somebody else is going to say, oh, I've got that problem too, or I had that issue and I did this, and that type of thing. So there is the option with that program of upgrading to like an option where you get more of me. So it's kind of like the middle bracket option. So I do like 4 coaching calls that's devised with a deadline. So I'm pretty strict at being clear but kind deadlines for people because, as you'll know, if you're working on your own creative work, it's really easy to keep pushing out your final end date because it can always be better. There's always something else that you can add or change, et cetera, et cetera. So I facilitate everything in a way that there's clear but kind deadlines that people have to meet so they actually pull their finger out and do the work. And it's super cool. Like I'm really loving what's coming out. I mean, what's coming out of the program, but to see people's transformations in that and their personal kind of transformations is, I mean, that's why I get up and do what I do because, you know, people start and they really are in that frame of, I know I want to write something. I just don't think I have anything valuable to say. Why should I contribute to this conversation because everybody else has? And to see people at the end, like with the result of an actual book and the fact that they started with the, I really didn't think I could do this. You know, I feel like a book is for everybody else, but it's not for me. It's really cool. Like, in fact, I went to a book launch this morning. My client, she's part of the Author Academy. She's actually based in the US, so I've got global people on there. And she's a Latina, and she sort of went through the project and through the program, and then she ended up pitching her book, and she got picked up by a publisher. It's actually being distributed by Penguin this month. And so it was her book launch today. So I'm zoning in the US and she's got, you know, like 80 people on this book launch. And I felt a little bit out of place at first because, you know, they're all, her book is about thriving in the fight, which is a really important message, especially if you think in the context of, you know, everything that's happened in the US over the last couple of years. And so she's got all these Latinas and people of colour and just a really diverse, interesting mix of men and women from all sort of different walks of life. And she sort of did this thing where we went into breakout rooms and chatted a bit. And it was awesome to hear, and I actually stuck my hand up and said who I was and actually gave this feedback, but it was really awesome to be in a room with the people in her audience, so the people that she was serving, to hear the impact that she had actually on them from reading this work, because she wrote this book for them. And that's why a lot of people set out to author work in the first place. You want to make a difference in people's lives. And when you get that and when you get that feedback back from people, it's a pretty incredible feeling. And I'll sum up because there was something that I took from it that kind of summed it up, because she really, what happened for her through the book, she gave herself, like, the book was a platform to give, to use her voice. But what happened concurrently that I picked up from them was it also gave her audience, like her readers, a platform to use their voice and be heard as well.
Wow, that's so powerful.
Yeah, it was super powerful. And she even said it wasn't about giving people a voice, but it was about encouraging people or empowering people to use their voice, because no one can give you a voice. You have to be the one to use it, which I really love, because I think if you think about why, you know, all this conversation today and why you might write, like, you have a voice, it's your choice whether or not you want to use it and put it into a book.
Oh, my God, that is magical. Yes, yes. And how many people have got amazing things to say and amazing voices, but as you say, they may not have that system or that support or that accountability or that know-how. You know, you've mentioned marketing. And that's so important now, no matter who publishes you, that you have to still do marketing. Everyone hates that word. I don't know why everybody hates that word. Let's finish off talking a little bit about marketing. What's your take on it? Why is
it important? Well, I mean, that's interesting, right? It's like marketing is like the dirty word. I think you just, I would reframe it from marketing, because it's, again, back to the strategy piece. It's up to you. It's your responsibility to get into your readers' hands. It is not your readers' responsibility to find you. I think that's a really big distinction. And that's, you know, and I think that's what makes a big distinction when you think about publishers, because people think, oh, publishers are going to do all the work and they're going to distribute it. They're going to put it in a bookshop. People are going to see it. They're going to buy it. It doesn't actually work like that. And if you, I mean, I've worked, especially this year, I've worked a lot with clients on, their book launch. So my husband, he works in my business as well. He's kind of like the back end and I'm the front end, you know, all the client facing stuff. His specialty is the marketing. So he's been working with some of my clients on their book launches. But if there's one takeaway this year as well, or last year from book launches, it's like, if you post on social media, like, and stuff like that, it's like social media does not drive sales.
Thank you so much for saying that out loud.
Yeah, but it does not drive sales. And if you put a post up and you could get, let's just say you get 180 comments, people saying how amazing it is, how they can't wait to read your book, blah, 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 they haven't actually gone online and pressed buy. So consumer behavior is really, really different. It's like actions are very different to what people say. And so if you put a post up and you get 100 people commenting and saying how amazing and they can't wait to read your book, there's probably like less than 10% who have actually gone and clicked buy. And I think that's the distinction with marketing, because it isn't just about awareness. It's about understanding consumer behavior. And so what are you going to do in order to get your book into their hands, in order to help people realize that this is the book that they need to buy it? And I think that's a really big distinction and a way of thinking about it, because I think people think about marketing as I just need to be here, there and everywhere, but that's just visibility.
Yeah, I love that distinction, and that is so true. Like I've totally lived that. And look, occasionally, absolutely this happens. I've noticed occasionally I'll put a post out or something on Instagram and I'll get like a bulk order of books, and I bet there's probably, you know, one teacher or one librarian that went, oh, we've got to get... That happens occasionally. But if I relied on that occasion because of social media, I would be dirt poor. I did make the decision last year to sort of do less social media personally. Still, I'm still present, but a lot less, and put more effort into writing more and doing more advertising. And that, in my, where I'm coming from, works a great deal better. at the actual sales. And, you know, it took about 4 years of going, this is not about vanity, dear. It's not how many people love your books. It is ultimately how many people read, buy
your books. Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that you've got to pick your poison. So, like, yeah, you need to sort of be everywhere and blah, 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 but what is the one channel that works for you that you're going to use and use that really, really well? But also all of the things contribute. So you can't expect that you're going to put up one post and then get a bulk order of 150. She's probably been following you for like 2 years, but you just don't know about it. So, you know, in marketing they talk about touch points, and most people need to have like 8 different touch points with you or something like that before they'll buy from you. It's the same deal, right? It's pretty rare. Like, and you could probably get in contact with your librarian and ask her. She knows you from somewhere else. She's seen a poster. She's seen you talk somewhere. She's followed you somewhere else, blah, blah, blah. Then she's seen that post and she's actually put in an order.
Yeah, that's so true. Even when I was, like, as I said, in counselling psychology, it was people would often come and say, I've known about you for 3 years. I'd be like, what? And it took them that long before they finally booked in to have their own session. And I think it must be the same. Yeah, even with
it's
products.
Exactly the same. Yeah. And products, I mean, that's right. I mean, a book is a product. But, like, it is something that you buy, it's a product.
So let's finish. I could talk to you all day, of course. But what I want to finish on is the word momentum. How does somebody get momentum and keep momentum going?
Yeah, what a great question. I mean, if I could answer this, I'd probably be a million-dollar momentum author.
That could be your next book title, Kelly.
Million-dollar momentum, how to get it and keep it. I actually think, I mean, my personal perspective is that it's unrealistic to think about momentum in that way. And actually, I can draw you a little diagram. I mean, you won't be able to see this in the podcast, but I'll be able to explain it. So we start on this journey and we think that there is a point A to a point Z. So if you draw a straight line, point A to that's what we think our expectation is with any kind of creative endeavor. The reality is, this is a second drawing, it's just a messy squiggle that's all over the place that eventually emerges at point Z. I think if you go into it with this expectation in the first place, that's how you keep momentum. Because momentum is not an A to Z journey. You are going to have dips. You are going to fall down the rabbit hole. You are going to drop off. You are going to need to have a week where you just hate your work and you need to step away from it. It's actually the ability to get back on the horse, to come back to it time and time again. That's what momentum actually is. That's what you actually need to work at. So I think busting your expectation at the start about, okay, this is going to be like the best thing I've ever done and it's going to be like the best way I've ever worked and I'm going to sit down every day at 5 a.m. or I'm going to bang out like 500 words for like an hour and then this and then that and blah, blah, blah. Because as soon as the day comes where you sleep in or you just can't be asked or you can't get the words out or whatever, that's your excuse to not show up the next day. And that's when our momentum dies, because that's when the internal voice kicks in that I'm not good enough, I can't do this, I don't have anything good to say, everybody's already done this, you know, and all this type of stuff. So if you just expect this is going to be a really freaking messy journey and you just have to be prepared to show up every little bit over a certain period of time, that's what's going to make you accomplish your goal.
Oh, what a fantastic answer. I was taking notes. And I will take it on board, I promise. You know, the first few years of being an author, it was so funny. Like, my kids will vouch for this, that every few months it was like, that's it. I quit. I'm not supposed to do this for my lifetime. It's meant to look prettier than this. It's meant to be messy. And then every time I'd say it, they'd be like, here she goes again. She's doing the whole like, I'm quitting thing, but she's not going to quit because she's not going to quit. So, yeah, it's beautiful. It's a messy, messy journey, but totally worth it when you get
there. Yeah, 100%. No one ever regrets it.
No one ever regrets it. Thank you so much for being on the show. I have learned so much from talking to you, and I'm sure that all the listeners out there will be scribbling down notes and contact Kelly. Yeah.
I'll give you a link as well to the quiz. So if you're curious about, you know, which personality you are when it comes to writing, you can fill out this little quiz and actually find out for yourself. And then there's some tools and strategies you can use to kind of overcome your obstacles.
Fantastic. I'll definitely be taking the quiz and letting you know if I'm officially an entrepreneur or not. Thanks again so much for being on the show, Kelly.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening and supporting the show. You can find the show notes and more episodes at www.creativegeniusatplay.com. Follow along on Facebook and Instagram at Creative Genius at Play. Until next time, keep creating and keep playing. Did you find that interview valuable? Great! Now be an awesome human and go and leave a review because it helps the podcast out so much. Want to read the show notes? Check out thechildrensbookauthorpodcast.com. Want to find out more about me, Eleanor Page? Find me at eleanorpage.com or come and say hello on social at Eleanor Page Books. Until next time, keep writing and keep learning.